Chapter 8. Never hold a woman's underwear up for public scrutiny. The announcement about the trip to Silver Lake was made at breakfast midway through the second week. John stepped up the front of the room and started to clap his hands loudly to try to get everybody's attention. "Listen up," he shouted, still clapping. The noise level started to decrease until only Gabe's voice could be heard over the slight murmur from the waiting campers. "It looks like a seal." The boys nearest him snickered. Mike sighed and gave a little wave to John when he turned, frowning, to look at the table Cabin 13 were using. "This Friday we'll be visiting Silver Lake for the annual Camp Algonquin Island Camp Silver Lake Dance," said John, brightly. Most of the boys cheered noisily. A few looked horrified, Jason among them. His normally pink-cheeked face paled. "Your counselor will tell you what time your cabin is due on the boat over to the mainland," John was continuing. "We'll be taking buses over to Silver Lake, where we'll have dinner with the girls and dance the night away." There was more cheering. Jason was deathly white. Mike leaned over to whisper to him. "You all right?" "My sister is at Silver Lake," Jason said. "Oh, this is the worst thing that could possibly have happened." With that, he put his head down on the table, his hair in the bowl of oatmeal he'd been eating. The other boys looked questioningly at Mike, who just shrugged. "Who knows?" he said. "Okay, guys, it's lacrosse this morning. Can you at least try to remember which way up the field you're supposed to be running today? Please." On the night before the Silver Lake dance, Mike and Rudy were later than usual getting to the campfire meeting. "Hey," Sam called over to them from their usual log, "what happened to you guys? We were about to give up and go in." Mike rolled his eyes. "Dance fever," he said. "Suddenly, half our cabin decided that jumping up and down on the spot isn't really dancing, that they needed to learn something a bit more sophisticated before tomorrow night. Someone downloaded instructions from the internet, and when I came back from my shower tonight, the entire cabin was tangoing. It took off now just to stop the worst of the bleeding." Sam laughed. "Where were you while this was happening?" he asked Rudy, who was accepting a toasting stick from Bob and was carefully flambeing a marshmallow. "Supervising," Rudy said, lazily, handing Mike the marshmallow. Mike snorted. "Yes, supervising. From the other room. With the door shut. Listening to my iPod." Rudy stretched his legs out close to the fire. "I draw the line at the tango, as rendered by Harold on the bassoon, as musical accompaniment to my evenings." "Rudy has a lot of lines like that," said Mike, nibbling at his marshmallow. Bob slapped Rudy on the back, grinning wildly. "Hi!" said Chuck from behind them. Startled, Mike dropped the toasting stick he was holding. Said Sam, hesitantly. "Hi?" Mike looked sadly at his dirt-encrusted marshmallow. Rudy held out a hand for it, threw the offending treat into the fire, and set to work toasting another. "So, Miller," said Chuck, ignoring Sam, "since Cabin 12 and 13 are sharing a bus tomorrow, I was wondering if you wanted to take the car instead. I thought maybe you and I could drive over. You can tell me everything you know about professional sports. I'm hoping to get scouted for the CFL, you know." Chuck was beaming. "No," said Rudy, blandly, carefully rotating the marshmallow in the fire. "You didn't know?" Chuck said, disbelieving. "I'm sure I've mentioned it before." "Only about 5 million times," said Sam, under his breath. Chuck glared at him and sat down next to Rudy on the log, smiling ingratiatingly once again. "So, what do you say? I'd love to see what the ride is like in that sweet car of yours." "No," said Rudy. "You're supposed to be on the bus to chaperone the campers," Sam said indignantly. Chuck shrugged. "Oh, Nick and Webster here can do it. I'm sure it doesn't need four of us. Nick said he didn't care." "I care. Have you met the kids in Cabin 13? Mike asked, irritated. Chuck ignored him. "Come on, Miller, it'll be fun," he coaxed. "You seem to be struggling with the concept of no. I'm not sure if I can think of any smaller words to use," Rudy said, handing the toasted marshmallow over to Mike. "Would it help if I grunted?" Chuck's face fell and he stood up. "You're sure?" he asked, disbelieving. "It's not just because your friend Webster is being a shit about you taking the bus." "Hey," said Mike, around a mouthful of marshmallow. "I'm not." Rudy looked up at Chuck. Oof, he said. "No." "Fine," said Chuck, scowling at Mike like it was his fault. He stomped off to the other side of the fire to join his usual cronies. Within seconds, most of the clones were glaring at Mike, too. "Wow," said Sam, picking up his bag of marshmallows. "What is his problem?" Mike jumped to his feet. "He's a twit," he said, dusting off his pants. "I wish he wasn't on the bus with us tomorrow." "Hmm," said Rudy, looking at Mike. They all looked at him, but he didn't say any more. "I'm going to bed," said Sam, yawning. "See you tomorrow." They exchanged good nights and went back to their cabins. Mike pushed the door open quietly. The campers were all asleep. "Damn," whispered Mike, tiptoeing past the bunks. "Gabe shaved more of his head." When Mike clambered aboard the bus the next afternoon, he was almost gassed. He looked at the Cabin 12 campers, who were already in their seats. "Holy crap," he exclaimed. "What is that smell?" Nick and Chuck, who were sitting at the very front of the bus, frowned at him. Rudy climbed on board behind them and took a cautious sniff. "Ah, the mingled scents of a dozen cheap brands of aftershave," he said, covering his nose. "Let's sit at the back and open the windows and break out the gas masks." Mike laughed. "Okay, all aboard," he called down to the campers milling about outside. He counted them in. "Nice hair," hooted a Cabin 12 camper as Gabe got on the bus. He now had a shaved stripe running horizontally across the center of his head, as well as vertically from back to front. Gabe gave the other camper a thumbs-up sign as he went to sit down. "Thanks, I really like it," he said cheerily. Smith trailed in last, clutching a pillow. He settled into the unpopular front seat, put his pillow down, unfurled a blanket from his bag, and curled up for a nap. Mike shook his head. 15. "Okay," he told the bus driver. "We're all in." The boys all cheered as the bus set off, and Mike made his way to the back of the bus, where he and Rudy piled up the campers' bags and sat down themselves in the small remaining space. The trip was only about an hour, and the campers were still at 116 bottles of beer on the wall, when Jason suddenly appeared beside Mike. "Hey," he said, looking uncomfortable. "I need to tell you something." Mike nodded and shuffled along the seat, pressing up against Rudy to let Jason sit down. Rudy opened one eye, sighed, and slung an arm around the back of their seat to give Mike a little more room. "What's up?" Mike asked, knowing Jason had been strangely subdued all week. "So, okay." He looked over at Rudy, who had closed his eyes again. "Is he listening?" Mike shook his head. "He has my iPod." "Right." Jason paused, chewing his lip. "It's all right," Mike said. "You can tell me." "So you know I had that picture of you and me and Miller at the campfire," Jason said in a rush, "and I have this sister, see, and she's at Silver Lake, and I emailed my mom the photo to show I was having a good time, and she forwarded it to my sister." He stopped to draw breath. Mike nodded. "Yeah, with you so far. And my sister emailed me and said I had to make you dance with her at the Silver Lake dance, because you're cute, right? So I said yes, because she's scary, only I thought we weren't going because we were so bad at sports and everything and because we were in trouble all the time. But now we're going to be there, and she's going to be expected to, like, dance with her," Jason said, finishing up breathlessly. Mike blinked. Jason looked at him pleadingly. "Please, she's, like, really scary." Mike grinned. "You're not selling me the idea very well here, Jason. So all I have to do is dance with your sister once, right?" Jason stood up. "You'll do it? Promise?" "Promise. One dance with your sister." Mike held out his hand to shake Jason's. "And maybe a couple of her friends," said Jason, backing away once he'd shaken Mike's hand. "What?" said Mike, getting up to follow Jason down the bus. At that moment, though, the bus slowed, and he fell back onto his seat. The campers gave up singing, 97 bottles of beer on the wall, and started to cheer as the bus turned under the big sign that read, "Welcome to Camp Silver Lake." Rudy opened his eyes and eyed Mike, pressed up close to him by the motion of the bus. He handed back Mike's iPod. "Sucker," he said softly. Mike gritted his teeth. This was his 8th dance of the evening. John was glaring at him. 2 of the clones had already asked him scornfully if he liked little girls. And Jason, surprise, surprise, was nowhere to be seen. His current armful of prepubescent Silver Lake camper looked at him through inexpertly mascaraed eyelashes. "You're not a very good dancer, are you?" she said. "No," admitted Mike, scenting a possible means of escape. "I know someone who is, though." "Who?" she asked suspiciously. "My friend Rudy," Mike said, gladly sacrificing his friend for the greater good. "He's amazing, really." The girl bit her lip. "Well, all right then," she said, frowning a little. "You really aren't very good." Mike grinned at her. "Great! I mean, I'm sorry. No, I'm not very good. Why don't you just wait here?" He groped desperately for the name. She pouted. Sally, she snapped. Sally, wait here, and I'll bring my friend here to dance with you. Mike inched away from her. Finally, she nodded. Okay, wait here, though, he said, then made a breakthrough through the side of the building. Outside, he could only just make out the bass beat of the Kelly Clarkson song he had just evaded. He stumbled along the path away from the Silver Lake mess hall and headed for the shore of the lake, thinking the hordes of teen girls who had descended upon him as soon as he arrived wouldn't look for him there. Escaped, said Rudy's placid voice from the darkness as he approached the water.
Ah!
Mike yelped. Jeez, give a guy a heart attack, why don't you? He went to sit next to Rudy on the bench overlooking the water, leaned forward, and dropped his head into his hands.
I feel unclean, he moaned. I want to make an official complaint about sexual harassment.
Rudy's hand was warm on his back, stroking through the thin material of his t-shirt. I hate you, by the way, Mike said, his voice muffled by his hands. I hate Jason, too. I think I'll hire Jimmy to build me a cannon, so I can fire Jason out of it. He sat up. Rudy's fingers slid up to rub soothingly at his neck, ruffling the hair that brushed his collar. Rudy? He said, his voice high and nervous. Suddenly, there was a strange crunching noise from the direction of the lake, and a startled scream. Mike jumped to his feet, trying to see what was going on. What the hell was that?
Davis, said Rudy, tersely, and a couple of others. I saw them take a boat out earlier. I've been waiting here to make sure they got back in all right.
As he spoke, he was stripping off. They aren't out too far. It'll be faster to swim than get another boat out. Mike nodded and pulled his shirt over his head, towing off his shoes and fumbling with his belt buckle. How many of them out there, and who?
Davis, Jason, Harold, Rudy said, walking down to the water's edge in his boxers.
Mike followed, shivering. They all had life jackets. They looked at one another briefly. Only one of the boys was a proficient swimmer. They waded into the water. Rudy kicked off as soon as he was in swimming depth, his smooth stroke allowing him to pull quickly ahead. Mike swam doggedly in Rudy's wake, still unable to see where they were headed. After a few minutes, he heard voices up ahead and stopped to tread water. The boys were bobbing about in the water in their life jackets, while a sailboat floated upside down next to a boy. There were, Mike was surprised to see, women's undergarments floating about all over the surface of the water nearby.
"Anyone injured?" Rudy was asking, calm as always.
"I cut my foot," said Harold, shivering. "And Jace is sort of wrapped in something."
"It's around my leg," came Jason's voice from the darkness.
"I'm okay," said Davis, his tone disgusted. "I can swim back."
"Mike," called Rudy, "grab Harold, help him back to shore. Davis, follow Mike. Keep really close to him."
Mike approached Harold. "Hey," he said gently, seeing the tears rolling down Harold's face. "How are you doing?"
"My foot hurts," Harold whispered.
"Okay, well, let's get you to shore and get that seen to," Mike said. He helped Harold float onto his back in the life jacket. Davis paddled up alongside them. He held one end of a rope.
"Rudy said I should tie myself onto you with this," he said.
Mike nodded and wrapped the rope around his wrist and threw the hook on Davis's jacket. He could feel some sort of fabric attached to the rope, but ignored it, concentrating on keeping Harold calm.
"All right, shall we go?" he said at last. "Nice and slow. Let's just head towards the lights from the camp."
They swam slowly together for a few minutes, Mike keeping up a steady stream of comforting words, pulling Harold along and keeping a close eye on Davis, who was tiring rapidly. He could already hear activity on the dock, though, and he soon heard a small motorboat pull away from the dock and head towards them. He came to a halt and helped Davis to float as well as they could while they waited for the boat, manned by two Silver Lake counselors, to reach them. Once it arrived, he helped boost the two boys into the boat, then turned back to see Rudy swimming towards them, Jason in tow. The little motorboat was full, so he and Rudy waved off the boys and continued to swim back to shore, Rudy holding back his pace without a word so Mike could keep up with them. There was a huge crowd assembled on the shore when they climbed out of the lake, shivering. Mike staggered up the pebbly beach towards his clothes, the long rope he had tied to himself to tether Davis trailing behind him. As he wearily unwound it, he realized it was some kind of washing line, attached to which were pink frilly panties.
"What the hell?" he exclaimed, holding them up.
"Do these belong to someone?"
he asked as a group of Silverlight campers turned to look at him. Suddenly a girl screamed and ran forward, snatching the underwear from him. Seeing his confused expression, she became even more irate and slapped him fiercely across the cheek before bursting into tears and running away. Startled, he stumbled back, tripped, and ended up on his back in the dirt, clutching his cheek. Rudy and the remaining Cabin 13 campers loomed over him. "Let that be a lesson to you, boys," Rudy intoned solemnly, offering Mike a hand up. "Never hold a woman's underwear up for public scrutiny." Glaring at Rudy, Mike pushed away his hand and scrabbled to his feet, unaided. 2 hours, a fast shower, and some emergency medical treatment later, waiting to board the bus back to Camp Algonquian Island, Mike was seething and looking for someone to take it out on. He shivered in the late-night breeze. Rudy appeared beside him, accompanied by two of the counselors from Silver Lake. "Thank you so much," they were saying, smiling coyly at Rudy. "I hope your boys are all right," said one of them, flipping her long blonde hair over her shoulder. "Will you call me and let me know?" asked the other girl, pressing a slip of paper into Rudy's unresisting hand. Both girls looked over at Mike when he made a sort of growling noise, and then, waving cutely at Rudy, they walked away, giggling and looking back a few yards from the bus. "Give me your sweater," said Mike, abruptly, holding out his hand to Rudy. Rudy blinked at him. "My sweater?" "Yes, give me your sweater." Mike glared at him. Rudy looked at him. "But I'll be cold," he said, crossing his arms. Mike leaned in and poked him in the chest. "Listen, so far today I have been pimped out by one of our campers, molested by 13-year-old girls to the soundtrack from hell, rescued 3 campers who wouldn't have been on the lake in the first place if you hadn't encouraged them." Rudy opened his mouth to speak, but Mike overrode him, his voice rising now with every word. "I've been slapped. I'm currently going commando in the most uncomfortable jeans I own, and because someone stole my favorite shirt, I am currently wearing a pink t-shirt with a smiling seahorse on it, because it was the only thing in the lost and found box that fit me. Give. Me. Your. Fucking. Sweater!" Wordlessly, Rudy slipped out of his sweater and handed it to Mike. "Thank you," he said, with freezing dignity, and boarded the bus as the Cabin 13 campers, more subdued than their wont, approached. Curling up among the bags on the back seat, Mike plugged himself into his iPod, closed his eyes, and pretended not to notice when Rudy sat next to him and said softly, "Mike?"